This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa. JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 145 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. Earlier in the offseason, I did a podcast called Stop Overreacting to Last Season's Results. And on that podcast, I dug into some high-level trends that we're seeing throughout the league and showed how sensitive the fantasy football world can be to previous season results. Running back sucked in 2015, for instance, and in 2016, we saw a wide receiver takeover. Last year, running backs were solid. Today, we're seeing higher running back average draft positions than we've seen in quite some time. It's important to not just react to the previous season, but to look at league-wide trends to give us a larger sample of how the league is moving. I did that a little bit in episode 127, but not to the level that you're going to hear today. Justin Freeman is a newer writer over on NumberFire, and he's been doing some really awesome work. He did a couple of pieces recently on the site that could really change the way that you look at fantasy football here in 2018. So I asked him to hop on the Late Round Podcast to talk about them. You're bound to learn something new from the interview. So Justin, in your article on NumberFire that's titled "The NFL is Changing and Your Fantasy Football Strategy Should Change with It," you analyze some of the high-level trends that have been changing throughout the league. One of those things you specifically dig into is pace of play and the relationship between pace and scoring. Can you explain what sort of trends you found?
Sure. So what I tried to do with this thing was to take a look back at the NFL data since the year 2000 and as many facets as possible, just to determine if there's like any emerging trends that can provide us with an indication of what 2018 is going to look like. So then how can we use that information to help our fantasy teams? So I just looked at every type of league-wide stat that I could imagine: total points, first downs, yardage, run-pass ratio, workload splits, you name it. And I didn't really have a goal in mind. I just wanted to see if anything popped and stood out. And as you mentioned, one of the things that stood out was pace. In other words, the number of plays run throughout the season over the course of all 32 teams. It feels like there's a big assumption out there right now that the league's never really been faster or higher scoring than it is right now. So I was shocked to learn that the game is actually slowing down quite a bit. It all peaked in 2013, and if you'll kind of think back to what 2013 looked like, it was Chip Kelly's first year with the Eagles. There was really a lot of college concepts making their way into the pro game, and we know that college spread offenses run wide open, 100 mile an hour for 60 minutes. And so ever since then, that kind of being the height of this, we've seen a pretty steady decline in pace, which is at least initially concerning for fantasy purposes because, as you know, plays are essential to fantasy success. Plays lead to volume. Volume leads to opportunity. Opportunity leads to fantasy points. So a decrease in plays yields a decrease in possessions and, theoretically at least, a decrease in touchdowns. That is really unless you can score touchdowns at a faster clip, which is exactly what the NFL teams have done in four of the five seasons prior to 2017. And then 2017 happened, and the bottom fell out for offenses across the league. So pace was down, scoring was down, yardage was down. Everything was just bad in 2017. So the year was truly an anomaly. So I think that means we're set up nicely to gain an advantage if we can make the proper adjustments headed into 2018.
So in this article, you also looked at the changes in rushing and passing tendencies in the league. Let me first ask about the rushing side of that equation. Does the data tell us that running the ball is indeed making a comeback like you hear a lot on social media and in the media? And with the influx in running back talent that we're seeing, are teams starting to utilize their top running backs a little bit differently as a result of all this?
Yeah, you could definitely create a pretty compelling narrative to say that the running game is back, but I'm just not sure that's quite what the data supports. The run-to-pass splits are pretty interesting to look at. You'd have to go all the way back to 1983 for the first time, or excuse me, the last time that the NFL saw as many rushes over the course of a season as pass attempts. So ever since 1983, pass attempts have gained steam and rush attempts have more or less petered away to the point where now it's about a 58-42 split in favor of the pass. So, and that gap's just kind of consistently gotten wider, wider, wider each year. And after seeing the pass to run ratio grow in favor of the pass in 7 out of the 8 prior years, 2017 reverted back to the run in a really sharp way. So that really stood out, and you can kind of explain this a few different ways. So you have the pass running away from the run all until 2017. I had some folks respond after I released the article that, you know, maybe the bump was due to an infusion of really good young running backs, which doesn't sound like a bad explanation, because we had to guys like Kamara, Hunt, Gurley, and some others that sort of headlined a pretty talented resurgent crop of running backs. But honestly, it would just take so many volume-heavy runners to swing it so strongly at the seasonal level that I don't think that's really it. In fact, the data suggests that lead running backs are getting less work than ever before across the board. In 2002, for example, leading rushers for their team were averaging over 60% of team carries. But last year, by comparison, leading rushers were just getting 48.6% of team carries. It's now those second and third rushing options picking up the extra slack. So yeah, we do have bell cow running backs, generally speaking, across the league, but that's not the same status that it once was. Those RB1s are seeing less than 10%, over 10% less of the team carries than they did even a decade ago. So even though we're seeing some good young names that we like, we got to realize that the league-wide trend is pointing towards committee work when it comes to toting the rock.
So let's look at the passing side of things then. How have teams been trending as it pertains to how they're targeting different positions on the field? So the wide receiver one, the wide receiver two, and so on.
Yeah, sure. So we've seen some pretty stable market shares, target market shares at the positional levels. Wide receivers, for example, they've never seen fewer than 52.9% of team targets and never any more than 56.1% of targets. That ironically was in 2016. So yet another anomaly for 2017 that it would dip in the way it did. But if we look closer, we see some gradual increase at the tight end position for target market share and some gradual decrease at running back, which sounds a little unusual given that we know how important it is for running backs to be dual threats and capable pass catchers, that they're actually getting less work in the receiving game as a proportion of the offense. But what's the bigger takeaway for me is how teams are managing targets within their preferred options in the offense. And here's what I mean by that. Let's take all the positions in the offense that receive targets and then strip the position off and simply look at them based on priority. You know, what percent of targets is the most targeted pass catcher getting? What percent of targets is the second most targeted pass catcher getting, and so forth? So this adds the tight ends and running backs to the equation with the wideouts. And what we notice is that just like running back rushes, the person in the offense seeing the most targets is actually seeing a decreasing percentage of those targets across the league. Even the second option in the pass offense is seeing a decreased role. So whereas we used to have kind of studly number one and number two receivers, now it's really the third, fourth, and fifth options that are stealing those targets away and getting more involved. So teams are relying on more players than they used to account for those vital pieces of the passing game. So just like we've seen a decrease in the bell cow running back, we see a similar diminished role in the bell cow wide receiver.
Really interesting stuff. So you also looked at NumberFire's expected points model in this article, and you showed the success rate of different types of plays in your article. So success rate being the percentage of positive expected points plays made by a runner or by a passer. I was kind of shocked by what the data said. So to the listeners out there, can you kind of talk about what you found?
Yeah, and you've sort of hammered this home time and time again on the podcast. We know that running the football is just not a winning proposition in today's NFL, at least comparatively to the past. In fact, last year was the least successful rushing year on record since 2000, which goes back to our earlier point about running backs not necessarily being the reason that running saw an uptick in 2017. Running back rushes posted a new low success rate of just over 38%, which is really just putrid, right? So, I have to be specific in referring to running back rushes, though, because there's actually a different type of rush that is the most successful play in football, and it's the quarterback rush. You know, going back to 2013, which was the height of pace in the NFL and the peak of experimentation in the league, quarterback rush success rate literally flew off the chart. It was hovering in like the 40 to 45% success rate range ever since 2000 all the way to 2013. And then, boom, 2013 came along, and the success rate jumped 12% in a single season, and it stayed there ever since. You know, by comparison, a quarterback dropback is success rate around 46 to 47% over the past decade, with the exception of 2017, which saw it dip under 45%. So to me, that's the bigger indicator of why teams might have abandoned the pass last year. There's just a lot of factors leading to, you know, decrease in passing efficiency, including quite a few injuries and just overall poor performance at the position. So I think it's set to rebound in a major way.
So you provided some fantasy football takeaways from that article, but before we talk about that, I wanted to pick your brain about another great article that you did on NumberFire about positional value in fantasy football. That's something that I love analyzing, and you and I have had a lot of back and forth on with the topic. But more specifically, you dug into the topic that I think that is underserved immensely in the fantasy football community, and that's with predictability. Can you briefly explain at a really high level what the study that you did was kind of all about?
Sure. So I wanted to challenge the assumptions we hold about predictability at the positional level through a couple different methods. So I just kind of walk you through each one. So I had to first start by defining how predictability might be measured. So first, I thought I'd look at time missed or number of games played in a single season. So obviously, when we draft a player, we're at least hopeful, if not even expectant, that a player is going to give us a healthy 16 games, right? We're not drafting them because we think they're going to get injured. We want them to play. But quite frequently, they do not stay healthy. So, or any number of reasons that will cause a player to miss games. So I dug into that on the positional level to see if there's any trends. I was able to pull data back since 2015 from Fantasy Football Calculator's average draft position to get 3 years worth of data on the top players drafted at each position. And what I learned was that quarterbacks miss the least amount of time. That's no big surprise, I don't believe. So an average of 2.2 games missed per year, which is still a little bit more than I would have guessed. Most of that was kind of attributable to 2017, which saw a really big spike in time missed for quarterbacks. And then next were tight ends at 2.6 games missed per season, then wide receivers at 2.9, and running backs brought up the rear at 3.5 games missed per year. So from strictly a predictive availability standpoint, the preference goes to quarterbacks, then tight ends, wide receivers, then running backs. Then the next measure of predictability was something I called lineup-worthy options. By taking a look at the Fantasy Pros expert consensus ranks, how many names showed up over the course of the season with at least 1 week ranked in the top 12 as a quarterback or tight end, or top 24 as a running back or wide receiver? I was really shocked to see so many names pop up on the list over the course of an entire season. 27 different quarterbacks were a top 12 recommended play at least 1 week during the season. There were 25 tight ends. There were 50 wide receivers that made their way in the top 24, and 55 running backs. So this suggested that from a predictability standpoint, there's quite a bit of turnover occurring at really all positions, and especially a running back, maybe more so than I realized. You know, you kind of think of those stud guys just being staples in the top 24 or really even the top 12, but that list is really turning over perhaps a little bit more frequently than we realize. And then after that, I took a look at both predictability on the seasonal and the weekly level, you know, to see if we're good at even just sorting these guys out.
So on a yearly level, are fantasy owners better at predicting certain positions over others?
Yeah, we actually are really bad at all of them. But in a way, we're better at some than others, right? So if we take a look at average draft position, and not even that, but position rank within the draft position. So what I mean is it doesn't matter when the wide receiver one came off the board or when the wide receiver seven came off the board, but let's just look at the fact that they were the one and the seven respectively. And we take a look at that type of analysis across the top 48 wide receivers. And what we find is, you know, pretty interesting. We see that the variance of the scoring based on where they were selected is about R squared of 23%. So that's not particularly good. However, it is the most predictive position that we have if we use top 48 options as defining the wide receiver population. By comparison, if we look at top 48 running backs, the R squared was at 14%. So 23% for wide receivers versus 14% for running backs. Just a good deal more variance. There's just seems to be a lot more things that can go wrong or go really, really right for running backs, whereas the wide receivers kind of cluster around the trend line. And we saw tight ends with an R squared of just around 16%, which puts them right in the middle of running backs and wide receivers. Quarterbacks are actually last in our predictability from an R squared standpoint at just around 8%, meaning that there were some really outlier performances in a downward direction that really affected these, because if you think about how many points a quarterback scores over the course of a year, it's a really high number. So there's naturally a lot more room for variance at that level. So from an annual standpoint, I do think it's fair to say that we're really good at predicting those wide receivers, at least comparatively, because it does give us, at least on a seasonal level, opportunity for those ebbs and flows at the wide receiver position to sort of balance themselves out. We know that they kind of have spike weeks, right? I mean, that's just sort of the nature of the position based on how few touches they would get in a single week. So it's either going to be boom or bust quite frequently for most wide receivers. But over the course of a full year, it really balances out. And those are definitely our best, most certain options on draft day.
So what about things then on a weekly level?
Yeah, so on the weekly level, running backs and wide receivers really switch roles. And the way I tried to look at it from a weekly level was, who did we know to play going into a week? So kind of like when I was talking about lineup or the options earlier, there was a game in week 3 in London where the Jags were playing the Ravens, and Mercedes Lewis catches 4 out of his 5 targets for 3 touchdowns and 50 yards or something like that. He was the tight end 1 that week, but nobody was on him. He was the tight end 40-something going into the week. So, like, nobody's on Mercedes Lewis. He was definitely not a lineup-worthy option. So who did we know to play on a weekly level? Well, if we look at, say, like, the top 24 running backs or the top 12 quarterbacks or something like that, how did those guys predict? How well do we sort these guys out on a weekly level? And we're actually really, really good at predicting running back. So it turns out the reason we're pretty good at projecting running backs is because the workload is very projectable. We know that, you know, running back X is going to get 15 to 20 carries a game and approximately 5 targets. So even though the names on that list are changing, we know roughly how much work they're going to get and what we can expect out of them. The wide receivers, on the other hand, really have a good deal of variance at the weekly level. We're not really good. So even though somebody may be, you know, the wide receiver 5 for the week and we have very high expectations, there's still a really, really good chance that player, you know, produces next to nothing or doesn't get that touchdown that they really need to push them over the edge. And so we really don't get a really good look at value at the wide receiver level on a consistent basis. So then if we go back to that R squared analysis, but look at the weekly level, so how well are we sorting out these guys weekly? We see that running backs have an R squared value on the weekly level at roughly 21%, wide receivers only 6%. So we know that we can say that the running back scoring is much more predictive than the wide receiver scoring. The tight end scoring is right around 10%. And quarterback scoring, once again, doesn't do well in the R-squared analysis at around 5% of explanation of scoring from the trend line. So we do get quite a bit of volatility. But as you and I talked about, there's quite a difference between volatility and predictability, at least especially as it regards the quarterback position.
Yeah, and so you just mentioned that about the volatility and the predictability aspect of things. We had a really good discussion about standard deviation versus the coefficient of variation, the coefficient of variation being the standard deviation of a data set divided by that data set's average. If you guys go back to the Superflex podcast that I did a few weeks ago, I talked a lot about the coefficient of variation, but I thought that you had a really good example as to why looking at the coefficient of variation is worthwhile when analyzing weekly predictability. So could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, and this is going to get really nerdy. So
yes, very nerdy.
Bear with me. But I think there's a pretty cool illustration that I can make here. So let's take your regular fantasy lineup, and I'm the commissioner, and I've dictated there's a new position that's going to be added to our lineups this year called lawnmower. And lawnmower is exactly what it sounds like. You get 1 point per blade of grass cut within your team's respective stadium. So if you have the lawnmower for the Patriots, you get 1 point per blade of grass cut at Gillette Stadium. If you have the lawnmower for the Redskins, you get 1 point per blade at FedEx Field, etc. So, You now have to draft and plan for the lawnmower position. So we're actually really good at predicting the lawnmower position because there's always roughly just as many blades of grass in 1 week as there was the previous week. The problem is that even though we're really good at predicting how many blades of grass are going to be in each stadium and are going to be cut for our scoring purposes, we're still going to miss by, say, plus or minus 10,000 blades of grass, right? So even though we're really, really good at predicting exactly how many blades of grass are going to get cut at each stadium because it stays relatively the same, we're still going to miss by a really large raw number. So in that example, our R squared is going to be through the roof. We're going to have really terrible R squared scores. We're going to show a lot of error in what we're doing. However, if we look at it from a coefficient of variation standpoint, or CV, what that's going to allow us to do is compare the rate at which we miss, the standard deviation, to the mean, which is maybe millions of blades of grass in a particular stadium. So, you know, if you think about it from that perspective, are we good at predicting the lawnmower position? Absolutely. Does it increase the volatility of our lineup by having that position in there? Absolutely. So those two things can kind of be true at the same time. So it's kind of an important nuance to pick up on when we're talking about volatility in your lineup and predictability in your lineup, that they're maybe not necessarily diametrically opposed to one another.
Yes, I love that analogy so much. So Justin, the big question to wrap all of this up, given what you found when looking at league trends and given what you found analyzing positional predictability and value, how should this all impact our fantasy football strategy here in 2018?
So one thing seems clear to me above all else is that the passing game is set to rebound in 2018 in a major way. We saw an extreme outlier performance in 2017 that favored the running game, but I really do believe it was a blip on the radar. I think if it was an actual trend, we'd see it sort of level out and then start decreasing over a period of time. But it was just really sudden, and I didn't really like that as far as an indicator of what the future would hold. So I think the former trend line that we were on is one that'll kind of increase, that favors the pass, that favors volume, that favors scoring. So I think we're going to see a pretty fantasy-friendly offense in 2018. I mean, just imagine you have a deflated balloon and you draw a series of horizontal lines on this deflated balloon a quarter inch apart from each other. And each of those lines represents a tier of pass catchers, right? Then you start blowing up the balloon. The air that you're blowing is representing pass game volume. And as your balloon grows, the lines get further apart, meaning that the difference in those tiers becomes more valuable. There's more distance there. So even though each tier is doing better as the volume increases, the highest tier still benefits most and even does so disproportionately. I think we're going to see a lot more air in that balloon in 2018 as far as the passing game goes. So my biggest takeaways are to just try to invest in the pass game. And you can do that not just by targeting wide receivers earlier. I do think there is some meat on the bone at the tight end position early in drafts. But really, pass catching running backs are kind of the cheat code to this whole thing. So we don't have to just choose these sort of blundering running backs that get lots of carries but aren't involved in the passing game. I want guys that are going to be involved in the passing game and can kind of take advantage of this rising tide so that, you know, I've got exposure to the passing game at really every position in my lineup. So on draft day, I think we can be a lot more confident that we select a good wide receiver for the course of the season than we can that we're selecting a good running back. And I do think that's something we've got to take into account. I do think we noticed that the running backs are cycling through at a higher rate. So that tells us something about the turnover at the position. So overall, I just came away from this without really trying to prove anything and learning that there's really a lot of reasons to be high on wide receiver this year. So, you know, I do agree with the consensus on these top four running backs in 2018, those being Gurley and DJ and Le'Veon and Zeke. But I think after that, I really want to hammer some of this falling value at the wide receiver position. And because those late round running backs that catch passes, we can get those on the cheap later on. And I do think, you know, while we can't replace the bell cow running backs workload, we're seeing that that's becoming a less realistic expectation to expect guys to take over backfields and stay that way for 16 games.
Awesome stuff, Justin. Again, both of the articles we referenced today are on numberfire.com, and Justin is on Twitter, at JustinFreeman18. Definitely give him a follow. I'm also on Twitter, at LateRoundQB, and don't forget to subscribe to this podcast by searching for it pretty much anywhere podcasts can be found. I'll be back later in the week with a mailbag episode. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'll talk to you then.